Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 767. It's the 4th of May, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Rob Proctor, CEO of Audioboom. Ticker there is Boom, of course. And Rob goes over some of the highlights from their 2016 full year results and talks about what they're looking forward to in 2017. Plus, I also have Michael Masterman, chairman of W Resources. WRES is a ticker there. And Michael covers some of the highlights also from their 2016 full year results and explains their potential for the next 12 months. Also, Stuart Bladen, CEO of Phalanx Group, FLX, gives us a trading update and explains what their recent £2 million fundraise will be used for. I also have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talking about Next, Royal Dutch Shell and Rangel Resources, and Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications on Andalas Energy and Power, Feedback Group and Repairer, as VIP ticker there. I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Plus, I also have the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets platform this morning. And two of those RNSs in the top five are from the same company. Exciting, eh?
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Rob Proctor, CEO of Audioboom. Ticker there is Boom. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon to you, Justin. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, you just released your final results, and you've been on you're a regular person on the podcast, and I'm sure many people are aware of what Audioboom do, and I often ask you to introduce it. But, Rob, take us through the highlights. How do you see it going so far? I mean, I was looking at the stock price down a little. Why do you think that is? Because I think, you know, the results there are looking good, especially going forward. What's your take on it? Bring out some highlights, if you could, Rob, from the results.
Well, I think the highlights of the results really are, you know, obviously showing that we're controlling costs and, you know, it's taken so long to get these results out at this point that without being flippant, I mean, I'm not even thinking about the results now because it's all about Q2 and Q3 this year at this point. But, you know, when I look at the highlights, we obviously put some markers down in the RNS for, you know, where our growth has gone, the 75 million monthly active unique users now. That's up from 58.5 just back at the end of November. You know, we're going to do, I don't know, probably 1.5 to 2 billion available ad impressions this year as well. When you combine that with some of the information that is in the 16 accounts, you know, controlling costs, the 35% decrease in UK headcount, but the increase in the US headcount in and around sales and content creation. You know, some of the podcasts that we're now creating, where we retain 100% of the revenue on them are huge. I think we had five of iTunes' top 10 podcasts last year through 16 and into now. We've just launched another two. One of them's already got 250,000 listeners an episode. So obviously we're selling media into that. I think the salient one, and you know, it's not in the reports and all of that, but this probably demonstrates where the business is going and where the growth is in this business. So we had a podcast that when it came on our platform 6 months ago called Astonishing Legends, was doing about 25,000 listens an episode, and it had three in-red ad spots that we were selling for $250 each. Since it's joined our platform, it's now doing 700,000 listeners an episode, and each of those ad spots we're now selling for $15,000 each.
Wow.
So instead of an episode being worth $750, it's now worth $45,000.
Wow.
That in a microcosm is what this business is all about.
And obviously, that's the kind of thing you're targeting, isn't it, going forward?
For sure. I mean, one, because when we know when we acquire an audience and bring a podcast onto the platform that has an audience, we know we can sell that inventory straight away. So that's great. That's instant revenue and that's all good. The key thing is that when we bring on a show like Astonishing Legends or Undisclosed, part of the agreement is they have to promote a show that we make ourselves. Mm-hmm. So as we've done with Undisclosed, where we've just launched a podcast called The 45th, and you can go and listen to that. That has to be promoted by Undisclosed. So that show's already got a quarter of a million listeners, which we're now selling the in-red spots for about $6,000 to $7,000 a spot. But it costs $300 an episode to make that show, but we keep 100% of the revenue. So as we release more of those shows, and we've got another 20 on slate to release this year, that will affect our overall sales mix, and it will see our gross margin go from 33 to 40% over the course of this year. So when you look across our whole piece, and we've got, I don't know, 5.4 or 5.5 in the market for revenue this year, you take the growth, the GM from 33 up to 40-odd percent, that has a material effect on our overall business.
Yeah, and I can see, really, because I was looking, I was thinking, now, you know, if you look at how you've expanded revenue-wise, of course, it's done very well, but it's from a low base, and I'm thinking, for how long can you expand this kind of revenue at this kind of percentage rate? But I suppose when you are targeting podcasts like this that have the ability to charge that amount per in-red advertising, then you can see it can keep growing, can't it, really, you know?
We grow on two sides. One, it was three sides, actually. One is, you know, we still, you know, brought on another 500, plus 500 new content channels last month. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that last quarter. So that means we're bringing on more content, which is great. We then have, obviously, the growth in the CPMs and our sell-through rate, so we make more money per show. And right now, we're obviously very focused on US, but UK is growing really well right now and is going to be significant through 18. And then through our partnerships with people like Spotify and Deezer, that opens up new markets like France and Germany that aren't in our modeling. We've not, you know, we're not even looking at that now, but we know the opportunity exists to recreate what we're doing in the US, in the UK, in France, in Germany, in Spain, in Sweden, in Italy. So, you know, the growth's built into our model. We don't, it's not like we're having to pull a rabbit out of our hat. The growth's built in, providing we just keep hitting all the milestones.
Yeah, so, I mean, looking ahead for this, for 2017 full year, I know it's a figure out the market of 5.4 million, around about that. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got 3 million already booked, including quarter one. Are you still confident mm-hmm. Are you still confident hitting that?
We're supremely confident. Obviously, Alan B. put the new note out. We're very happy with the number that's out in the market. We can see the run rate and where we're going. As you said, you know, we've told everybody what we booked so far this year after 4 months. Mm-hmm. We know what our sell-through rates are. We're happy with the number.
Yeah, so I'm just realizing that it's just after 4 months you've booked sort of 3 million. So that's yeah. I mean, you should seem quite confident of hitting that 5.4 then.
And we know that Q3 and Q4 are our two best quarters of the year. Q1 and Q2 are our worst quarters, bizarrely, because our year end ends on the 30th of November. Mm. So we start, Q1 is all over Christmas, which should be great for advertisers. But actually, nearly all of the podcasters take an extra week or two's holiday over Christmas. So we have half the inventory to sell in Q1 than we do in Q4. So to be where we are Q1, Q2 this year, when we look at Q3, Q4 this year, look at our run rate, our sell-through rates and our CPMs, as I say, we're very happy with the number that's out in the market.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so if you could then, ideally, Rob, I mean, you know, looking ahead a couple of years, where do you see Audioboom sitting in the grand scheme of things here?
I think the percentage in increase in revenues from last year to this year, you know, given what we're looking to do and expanding and all of that stuff, I would expect similar levels to persist through 18 and 19. I can't see any reason we'd back off from those levels. If anything, we're accelerating right now, not going backwards. So this market is exploding so quickly. Mm-hmm. And we are in a prime position already, let alone with a cookie cutter model that we know we can turn the handle and keep reproducing, not only in the UK and the US, but as we, having learned our lessons, we look to France or Germany or Spain or what have you, and we just implement a commercial first model not about the platform. It's not about anything. It's about acquiring podcasts with audience that we just go and sell the InRed advertising to. Then we build the programmatic and the platform after that event. But we lead our commercial first moving forward.
Yeah, okay. And going forward now, talking about Sona and building in this artificial intelligence there so that the ads are more targeted, how is that going and when is that going to be implemented?
Yeah, it's going really well. I think the DMPs, the data management platforms, module that we produce off the back of that. The guys are working on it now. We've just signed a really great agreement with Sheffield University, who are one of the leading, you know, centres of excellence for NLP and AI development in the UK. So our team is working directly with all of their PhD students and lecturers on the implementation, the teaching, the learning, and the growth of those algorithms. So that's in really good shape. I think off the back of that, our audio to text, we're doing a lot of work with that. Sheffield University indeed have an amazing audio to text transcription department. So we're going to be working with them on that. And you'll see those product rolling out end of Q3 through Q4. I think we put in the market. We launched those products on the 1st of December for the new year, coming up this year. So, I mean, everything's on track to do that. I mean, it'll be a steady phased approach. We'll evaluate the effectiveness of each of the different modules and where we put the effort in. But everything's on track to deliver what we said we would when we made the acquisition.
Yeah. And finally, Ron, are you finding it in a kind of ways of it easier, really? Because I even now I'm seeing on social media sort of, you know, I mean, I don't mean this your job wise, but I mean, I'm seeing on social media now, you know, celebrities joining in jumping on the podcast bandwagon, you know, and this must help a lot, mustn't it?
The whole sector is exploding. I mean, what's really nice, and without sounding too smug about it, I've been chatting all of this stuff for the last 3 or 4 years, and I think over the last 18 months, everybody stopped believing me. I think everybody's probably starting to believe me again at this point. With view to the celebrities, I think, especially here in the UK, the thing that everybody should keep in mind, if I'm, I don't know, a leading comedian like we've got on our platform, to pay my mortgage, I have to rely on either ITV or BBC commissioning programs. Mm-hmm. So my whole livelihood really is controlled by two people.
Yeah.
Those people produce a podcast. They own their RSS feeds. They own that audience. So you see people like Ramesh Ranganathan, who's now got a couple of 100,000 listeners per episode to his show. Mm-hmm. That's his show forever.
Yeah.
And providing he's making new content and people keep listening, he will make money from that forever. So he doesn't need to be beholden on the BBC and ITV anymore. And more talent are beginning to recognize that fact and realize they can create revenues and an industry and a brand all for themselves, and podcasting is a great route to do that.
Yeah. Okay, I did say one more, but this is the final one. It's and I noticed in the updated date, you've pushed out sort of becoming cash flow positive now to 2018, final quarter 2018. Why that push out? Mm-hmm. Because originally it was towards the start of 2018. Why has that been pushed out, Rob?
It was the whole thing's about flexing the model. So, you know, we could pull up the drawbridge now, we could drive it for the next quarter, and we could go cash flow positive. But that's great. The end of 2018, you won't see the revenues that we are now going to get because we're priming the pump to bring those audience and those podcasts on. We have to stay ahead of that curve because every time we bring on a podcast, we then can go and monetize it. But, you know, agencies are paying 90 to 120 days. By the time we get the podcast on, we onboard them, we run that, we do all of that stuff. You're 6 months before you see a real impact on revenues into the bank on the cash flows.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have to do that work if we want to get to the kind of numbers that David Allenby have put in his model, and the whole thing is modeled out. But we have to keep driving forward. In a massively expanding industry, if you're standing still, then the net effect is you're going backwards against your competition. So we have to keep driving forward.
Yeah. Okay. And are you seeing any interest from maybe other groups looking at Audioboom a bit and thinking, in almost a target kind of way or not? Even though you can't really say that here, but are you?
And as you say, I can't really say that here, otherwise the aim board will have me up and they'll rip off my pits.
All right. Well, listen, one final thing I always do this, Rob, and for anyone listening now, and they understand the podcast market is booming and, you know, you're in the centre of it all, and they haven't followed you on Vox, think of three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, Rob.
Well, number one, the podcast and digital audio market is the fastest growing sector of any of the digital media markets right now. Audio Boom sits right in the middle of that, and we've done the hard yards for 4 years to earn a right to have a seat at that table. The second one is just look at our cost control lines and where we're placing that money to work in terms of audience acquisition and sales through our US and UK offices. And the third one, just look at the total revenue growth. I mean, it's triple digits across the board on every one of our KPIs. If you're going to invest in a company, you want a company in a massively expanding market with growing revenues, with growing user bases, and with a company with proven technology that's controlling costs.
Marvellous, Rob. Good to speak to you, and hopefully speak again soon. Thanks very much.
All right, mate. Thank you, Justin. Good being on.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Masterman, chairman of W Resources. That's WRES ticker. Michael, thank you for coming back on.
Justin, great to be on.
Excellent.
We've just had our results out, so great to talk to you about them.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about in a bit. But before we get into the finer detail, the highlights there, and the bits you're proud of, Michael, for people not aware of W Resources, can you give a brief sort of potted history of what you're all about, please, Michael?
So W Resources is focused on tungsten, and we've also got a great copper and gold portfolio. We have two tungsten development mines in Spain and Portugal. The largest is La Perilla, which we're driving towards 2 million tonnes of mined ore to produce 2,500 tonnes per annum of tungsten concentrate. And our other one's up in northern Portugal, Régua, which is a very high-grade tungsten mine development.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so like we said yesterday, you released your final results for the year, ended the 31st of December. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Michael.
Okay, look, we've achieved a hell of a lot in 2016 and used our shareholders' funds very wisely and very effectively to advance and expand W Resources. La Perilla is very much focused and on track to move into significant production in 2018. We started production in 2016 and ran that through the back end of 2016 and early 17. We're gearing up engineering and procurement to expand La Perilla, and that's going to be a very, very important step for the company.
Yeah, so La Perilla is very much the focus here, isn't it, Michael?
Look, it's a very large, it's a world-scale project with very low operating costs and very low capital costs. There's a huge number of reasons to get the mine in production in a timely way, but we're being very purposeful and careful in all the work we're doing on the engineering and design fronts.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, as far as a timeline at La Perilla, what's the next milestone you're hoping to achieve from that?
Look, I think there'll be a lot of milestones that'll come out over the next couple of months. An important one is a final investment decision on the expansion to 2 million tonnes of mined ore and 2,500 tonnes per annum of concentrate. A lot of work's going in on both the development fronts, and we're maintaining the pace of development in the lead-up to that final investment decision.
Excellent stuff. And looking at other parts of the business, I know you've got the copper gold resource. So what's happening there?
So we've got very, very good gold resources in São Martinho, and we've just added two very good former copper mines to the portfolio in our Tinoco license in central Portugal. We've kind of said to shareholders, hey, you're going to get much better value if these copper gold resources are held directly in your hands. So we're working away at the options to pursue a spin-off of the copper gold assets, and that'll be a nice upside for the shareholders of W Resources as well.
Excellent stuff. And other parts of W Resources, what's happening there?
Regua, which is our northern Portugal project, is advancing. We'll focus on the main development of that in 2018, but yeah, that's in very good shape and getting better and better as we do more work on it.
Excellent stuff, Michael. So as far as you're concerned now, you know, in the next sort of 12 months, I mean, you've got a lot of things going on, haven't you? And what are you most excited about, do you think?
Well, look, La Perla is the big one. The big milestones are going to be final investment decision with the associated financing to drive La Perla into large-scale, very low-cost production in the beginning of 2018. That's going to generate very significant cash flows for the company next year and the following year. And we're also very much focused on moving the other assets along, with small and sensible amounts of capital.
Yeah, and you mentioned the cash flows there next year, generating significant cash flows. Can you give us sort of ballpark figures, put into people's heads, you know, what the potential is here, considering you are at the moment a sub 15 million market cap company?
Look, in our project forecasts, we get up to around 30 to 50 million US dollars in EBITDA, earnings before interest and tax. So that's, you know, very healthy earnings. We've got some important work to do to get there, but we've got our eye on the prize and working away to reach that objective.
Marvellous.
And shareholders can take a lot of solace and support from all the very good work we did through 2016 going on to 2017.
Excellent, Michael. Well, you know the score here. I'm always after those three reasons. So if anyone's listening now and they like the sound of this project and where it's headed, could you give them three reasons, if they're not following you, as to why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox, please?
Three reasons. La Perla will be one of the largest, lowest-cost tungsten mines in the world. It'll generate large amounts of production and, importantly, cash flow. So we're focused on driving that forward towards its material expanded development coming into 2018. Regal is a great follow-on asset, which will further boost our tungsten production. And shareholders can look forward to hopefully some upside from the spin-off of Copper Gold Resources.
Excellent, Michael. Good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, fantastic, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Stuart Bladen, CEO of Phalanx Group. That's FLX ticker. Stuart, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Justin. Good morning to you. Nice to talk to you and your listeners again.
Yeah, well, you've had three bits of news out today. We'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, as always, I'd like to give people a summary as to what any company that appears on the podcast is about. So what is Phalanx Group all about, please, Stuart?
We do cyber and intelligence. Cyber means we protect and defend our clients in cyberspace from being hacked. And intelligence means we help clients understand a rapidly changing world.
Excellent stuff. And as we all can attest, it's probably a big growing sector there, because everyone is online pretty much these days, and people can't exist without it. So let's go into the news today in chronological order. So first and foremost today, you announced a trading update. Can you take us through some of the highlights from that, please, Stuart?
Yes, sure. So we've had a transformational year. Overall, we've grown 50% year on year. Our cyber business doubled its revenue from the first half to the second half alone, and increased from 6 to 29 clients over the year. And our intelligence business, which is a more mature market, also grew 13% with our embedded analyst business growing particularly strongly. That's where our clients are actually employing our staff full time to advise their boards in this rapidly changing world that we live in.
Yeah, that's impressive growth there, 50% up there. How have you managed to achieve that? What's driving that, Stuart?
Well, it's the uncertain times we live in, I'm afraid. I mean, first cyber, barely a day goes by without a big name hack. And there are also important new regulations, the General Data Protection Requirement, or GDPR. And companies will be forced to report all cyber breaches, and you can be fined up to 5% of turnover. And if you think about it, that's most of your profit for the year, if you get it wrong. So boards can no longer put cyber in the pending tray. They have to prepare, and that benefits us. And secondly, because the fines and losses with cyber are so large, many people now want cyber insurance.
Yeah.
And so companies are going to need cyber MOTs. You can't have insurance without an MOT. And it's just the same in cyber. You have to meet the right standards. And again, we can help with that. And on the intelligence side, our business is also growing rapidly, and that is driven by the real amount of political change and unrest that we're seeing globally, by the rise of terrorism on the downsides and the opening of new emerging markets on the upsides. And all these changes mean that companies need a better understanding of the places that they operate in and of the people that they are partnering and trading with, and that's what we do.
Yeah, excellent stuff. So what does this growth mean sort of for Phalanx here?
Well, it's been tremendous for us. It's been genuinely a transformational year. I mean, that tends to be overused, but in this case, I think it's really true. I mean, firstly, we moved our operations to Birmingham and we tripled our capacity in December. And I couldn't believe it. By March, we'd already filled the space and we had to expand again. And we've literally doubled the size of our cyber team this year. And we did all this without even having a sales team in place. And so I've just put in place a new sales team with a new leader to drive continued growth in the coming year. And last year, we completed the acquisition of ASC. We've completely rebuilt our board. Four of the six of us are new since last spring. And then finally, we deployed our own technology solution. It's called Midgard, and it's a platform to monitor the middle ground of business. So in all, it's been a fantastic year. And actually, we really look and feel very different, even down to a completely new website, Justin.
Yeah, well, I've checked that out. But I want to go back to what you said in the highlights. You said you were UK government CHECK accredited. Now, what does this mean, Stuart?
Yeah, we recently became CHECK accredited by the UK national authorities, part of GCHQ, actually. And it means we're approved to provide IT health checks and to identify vulnerabilities for Her Majesty's government and public sector. So it's a big tick. And in short, it opens another big market for us. And it also rounds out our qualifications more generally, because we're also CREST accredited, we're available on the government's G Cloud, and we're certified to important standards like ISO 9001 and ISO 27001. And each accreditation expands the amount and type of work that you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's go back to that. We just mentioned there you're doing a lot of changes, like in implementing the sales team and do some board changes. And, of course, this is needed if you're a growing business. But some shareholders are probably thinking, yeah, but bringing these people on costs money. What do you say to that?
Well, of course they do. That's an accounting fact. I mean, the real point is whether it's money well spent. And certainly in terms of the board, we need a team capable of taking Phalanx through strong and rapid growth, who can command the confidence of government departments, of corporations, and major institutional investors. And you need a senior experienced team for that. And you also need a strong sales team with good leadership to drive the kind of growth that we want. And so we've built that team for our future. And as for the costs, particularly at the board, those, of course, are made public, so they can be tested, challenged, and benchmarked. And I think the most important point is that we've tried to align very carefully with shareholder incentives. And if I can just speak personally for a second, it's unusual, but actually, as a board member, everything that I earn is open to public scrutiny. And I, for example, took a pay cut to come to Phalanx because I was excited by the potential. And much of my own reward is directly linked to share price, directly linked to benefiting shareholders.
Yeah, yeah. And so let's go to the other bit of news announced today, the placing to raise £2 million. Take us through that, please, if you could, sir.
Yes. So this morning we've just placed over 29 million shares. It's 2 million quid, as you said, so it's quite significant. So why have we done that? Well, the cyber market in particular is growing rapidly, and it's important for Phalanx to grab our share quickly, because that's what maximises our future value to shareholders. So we're delighted to announce this placing, and that it actually followed several approaches to us from interested investors. In fact, we were oversubscribed this morning.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and I see, yes, of Mike Reed there taking a part in that as well. So he has confidence in the business going forward. So if people are listening to this now, still thinking, yes, I like this sector, it's obviously a very hot sector, it's much needed, you know, cybersecurity and intelligence, but are not following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
It's been a transformational year for us. We've delivered 50% growth. Number two, we've now got an incredibly strong team in place to continue our growth. And number three, we're in the right place in what I think is the world's fastest changing, most exciting marketplace.
Good to chat to you, Stuart, and hopefully speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Justin, nice to talk to you. Bye-bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
All right, Justin. Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Not too bad.
Now, I'd like to have you on the podcast and because you keep an eye on the bigger stocks, stocks of interest here. And reporting today, I did see headlines on Next. I heard about Royal Dutch Shell as well. And Next, at the moment, looking at it, presently down just over 6%. So I'm assuming it didn't impress.
Yeah, that's right. Not hot at all. I mean, they said themselves that the consumer remains under pressure. Things like real wages, that's wages after inflation, remain very muted. And the bottom line is they've given some new guidance about their profits. Previously, they thought that at best, the profits would only be down 1.3%. Now they're saying the profits might be down 6.4%. That's their best guidance.
Wow.
Their worst guidance is for the profits to be down, this is on a year-on-year basis, down 13.9%. So, you know, it's not clearly a hot environment for consumers. Clothing is clearly competitive. You know, you and I may not be the biggest users of Next and the other chains out there, but those that are in and out of them all the time, you know, there's lots of competition, lots of differentials now. Next is a solid old business. It's not particularly fashion centred, but bottom line is it's getting hurt by a reluctant UK consumer combined with just much more choice out there.
Yeah, do you know what? This was the third choice in our on a weekend podcast with two friends. There, we did this experiment: £1,000 to £100,000 in 50 trades or less, achieving 10% or more. We started off with EasyJet. We achieved that. We got a 12%. Then we had Sky, and luckily we were in the middle of that takeover bid, and it went nuts.
There you go.
As you know, yeah. And we've placed a limit order on Next when it was about £40, a couple of weeks back, just over 40 quid, and we said, well, let's go for £39.99. You know, like retailers do, they like to cut a penny off. So we put a limit order there, and it started rising. We didn't get filled, and it started rising. I thought, well, let's see, wait until the results come out. We were thinking of raising our limit order higher. I'm glad I haven't now, because I'm thinking that 40 quid level is a solid sort of support level. And like I said, you know, even though they come up with bad figures, going back in November of last year, this was 80-odd quid a share. So you can pretty much see, I think, a lot of the bad news is priced in. You will see volatility because they're, like I said, they're trying to get back to the original model they had, I think. Isn't that what they're doing? They said they missed out this year on something of fashion or trends, so they ignored their original sort of idea or model or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not convinced it's so much a fashion mist. I just think that the market's changing. Look, Next was super quick into things like directories, and their online offering, their directory offering was top of the league, top of the class. Other people have caught up on that. That's the reality. So when I look at the numbers, no, it's more the fact that it's a competitive market. For example, look at their full price sales. So these are, you know, top price sales. These aren't any discounted in any way. They're now saying that they're going to be between up only 0.5% to maybe down 3.5%. That's the sort of range they're giving. Yeah. That's the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem is getting people to take a couple of £20 notes out their wallet rather than waiting for the sales and only giving one of those £20 notes up. That's the key problem for Next and, frankly, all the other retailers out there. So, yeah, you know, it's bottom line, though, is I think you're right. 40 quid is a great level. Every time you see Next shares below 40 quid, because they are cash generative, they're not shy about giving money back to shareholders. You know, you put all of that into sort of the mixer and you say for yourself, sub 40 quid, good risk reward. Look, a few months ago, the shares troughed out at about 36, 37 quid. And recently they were as high as 43, 44. That's the sort of trading, you know, range that you've kind of got at the moment. So I think, you know, in your plan to make 10% on various stocks, buying sub 40 quid for kind of a 43, 44 quid level, that makes a bit of sense.
Yeah, and just looking at the price, the breakdown here and their results, first quarter sales, Next Retail, which is of course their shops in the high street, down 8.1%. Next Directory, up 3.3%. So total down 3%. So you can see, I can see them focusing. I wouldn't be surprised to start shutting a couple of shops that aren't doing so well and focusing more online, you know?
Yeah, well, I think what they've said, actually, they're still opening some store space. But what they're sort of saying is that actually they want to differentiate, because they want to use things like, they've got these home stores now and things like that.
Yeah.
They want to get out there in the high street. Maybe they can cut some great deals, maybe not. Whilst others are contracting, they want to still be a presence there. But I think you're right. They've got to, ultimately, the Directory business is going to be ever more of the focus. But frankly, as I say, they've been a market leader there for years. The trouble is everyone else is catching up.
Yeah. Okay. Royal Dutch Shell, I didn't see what was the deal there. I know BP reported better the profits a couple of days ago, yesterday, was it, I think. But how are Royal Dutch Shell doing then?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's very, very similar trends to BP, because ultimately, of course, these guys are price takers. Yeah. And the fact that you have sort of a lagged benefit, if your price goes up, these guys get the benefit in a subsequent quarter. So all of those gains in sort of the last three quarters of 2016 are all sort of now starting to come through. Your comparison base is very easy. Unsurprisingly, profits, cash flow generation has gone up. So, you know, that's good. We saw that in BP as well. And similar to BP, Royal Dutch Shell confirmed that their dividend, they're holding their dividend, so that thick end of 7% yield is still being paid to shareholders. So, you know, pension funds, and I'm sure many listeners alike will be saying, you know, thank goodness for that. But the really important stuff, and I think why the shares are up today, is because two things are kind of happening. Number one is they're still obviously integrating and getting the most out of that big BG acquisition. And that's still moving on apace. You know, they see great opportunities still from that. And I would agree. I mean, if you're going to criticize the BP results of the other day, you'd say the trouble is BP's been in contraction mode for too long. Whilst Royal Dutch Shell made this big play on BG, probably got some good assets there at good prices. And if the oil price and the gas prices just do continue to firm up a bit, then the bottom line is that will pay off for them. So I think that's helping Royal Dutch. Second aspect is for the third quarter in a row, they've covered their dividend through cash flows, which sounds arcane, but it's actually really important because, as I say, if you've got a thick end of 7% yield, your big question is it sustainable?
Yeah.
And the reality is, at least at this moment in time, even at these slightly shabby oil prices, they are covering that. Now, going forward, it's not easy because ultimately they're going to have to spend more money on things like CapEx and developing their business. So they really do need an oil price to ultimately go up into the 60s and possibly beyond. But bottom line is, if you're worried about things like dividend cuts and stuff like that, it isn't going to happen at Royal Dutch Shell in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the shares tipped up a bit today. My view is, big picture, I think Dutch is all right. If you like income, absolutely fine. Capital growth players, you know, anything below £20 is a really interesting level on this stock.
Yeah, and I think the policy is, haven't they? They've never cut the dividend since World War II, or something ridiculous.
Yeah, so, that's right. So you know, they're very, very wedded to it. The trouble is, and certainly there were big concerns a year or so ago, you know, was it going to be sustainable? So far they've proved up, but they've done it because they've slashed CapEx big time. The question is, you can't do that forever.
Yeah.
The question is, at some point they've got to start increasing that again. And this is why, of course, you know, as a peripheral observation, you've got that kind of consolidation happening in oil services. Why do you think AMEC and Wood Group are coming together? Because, of course, the management of Wood Group see opportunities in oil services going forward, and they want to make sure they're a big behemoth there in order to sort of sell some higher price services to people like Royal Dutch Shell in years to come. So, you know, they've got to spend a bit more money in the future. But in order to do that, they either need the oil price to play ball, or they've got to have some of these mega projects really come in. And that's why this BG deal was smart. and, you know, ticking the box there, that gives them a bit different optionality to, let's say, a BP.
Yeah, do you know what? Look at the chart. It does look very pretty because they, a couple of, I think last week or so, last week, they just bounced below that 200-day moving average, which I know a lot of people, especially technicians, say that is the ultimate bull bear divergence there. And so they're below that. And they did go below it. And even today, with today's gap up, they've managed to sort of hit their head on that. And so it's proving a bit of resistance there. So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out, you know?
You can't turn down a 7% yield. I know not everyone invests for yield, but, you know, for yield munchers, it's kind of interesting, right? You know, I'm a bit more of a total return, perhaps a bit more biased towards capital growth sort of guy. And consequently, you know, you're going to have to, say, answer a few of these questions on things like CapEx and stuff like that to get very, very excited about Shell here. Sub 20 quid, I'm prepared to give it a go.
Cool. What else are you looking at there, Chris?
Randgold, probably the other one. I mean, this is a perennial favourite of mine, obviously a big gold mining company out in Africa with mines in Mali, Côte d'Ivoire, DRC, etc. You know, nice set of numbers from Randgold today. Look, the fourth quarter last year was absolutely mega for them, but year on year compared to quarter one last year, gold production's up 10%, cash costs are down a little bit, $619 an ounce, so i.e. well below the gold price. And bottom line, the reason I love this company is because their essential tenet is to get a double-digit return from their mines at $1,000 gold price. So, you know, with gold nicely above that level at the moment, it means your profitability is very good. They're smart operators in, you know, let's face it, challenging countries. They've got great gold grade in their mines and good sort of exploration and future potential too. Dividends up as well. They are paying a small dividend too. Cash on the balance sheet. Very, very nice company. So bottom line is, I would say Randgold remains, for me, an absolute core buy. Shares are slightly up today. Fallen below, you know, for me, when they fell below £70 the other week, I thought that was interesting. Here at sort of circa £67, I think it's a long-term tuck away. You know, my views on the gold price is that it's undervalued. I think that's clearly a tailwind which will help Randgold. But bottom line is you've got a well-performing, sensible company here. So one of my favourites. Good to see them coming out with some sensible comments today.
Marvellous. So we covered retail, we covered oil and gas there, and also gold.
Nice selection there, Justin.
Exactly. And I don't know, Randgold, is the volatility's come out a bit now. It's starting to settle down, which I like, because last couple of 6 months, it's been all over the place. About £100 a share, down to 55, and now it's calming down, so it's good to see that, and it's flattening out, and hopefully it'll get above that 200-day moving average and start to crawl higher, maybe. But, it's good. Thanks, Chris. Speak next week.
No problem. Absolutely.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. Are you all right, Al?
Good morning, Justin. Very good, thanks. Do you have a good holiday?
Yes, it was very good, actually. I really enjoyed it. We just went to Centre Parks for, you know, four nights, but the kids enjoyed it. And it's good to get to a certain age where you can put them in sort of, you know, activities and you can go to the bar.
Exactly. I remember it well with mine. We had a mobile home in the south of France, and we'd go down there, and the kids would just go, and it was great. We could just put our feet up on the decking and drink wine, which is always good.
Yeah, exactly. So it was good, actually. It's odd weather, though. We had a sun, and one day it snowed. What's going on there? It's still quite bitter, isn't it, this April? Or this May now we're in. But it's still, you know, evenings and mornings are very cold. Anyway, listen, we're not here to chat about the weather, Al.
We're here to talk about stocks.
More important things than the weather and stocks. So what are you looking at?
Okay, well, three stocks to discuss. I want to revisit Andalas Energy. So, of course, Andalas Energy, Epicode ADL. This has long been a bulletin board favourite and has been discussed probably more than any other stock over the past year. Just to recap, Andalas Energy are in the process of developing what are called wellhead IPPs, power plants, which mobile power plants, which basically convert the gas from the wellhead into power to supply the community. They operate in Indonesia. There's a well-documented power shortage in Indonesia. It's a burgeoning economy. Massive population growing, and in many regions in Indonesia there are power blackouts the whole time, and to the point where the government have basically identified this as a major priority, and they've issued a decree, which was announced by Andalas yesterday, stating that Wellhead Mobile Power Solutions are ready to go, don't need to go through a tender process. They can be implemented through a fast-track approvals process. Now, Andalas have a joint venture with Pertamina, which is the state petroleum and gas company, and they've identified a number of projects. They signed the joint venture with Pertamina September last year. They submitted the plans to the government in December, and the government have since then, as I said just now, modified the process, which no longer requires a tender. And of course, any day now, we hope to hear that Andalas has received formal permission from the government to proceed and build these. We were talking earlier just about funding for Andalas, and clearly this is one thing that's been discussed on bulletin boards. The loan note that they had from Sandebel has been extended, albeit at a hefty cost, to the end of July. But as we know, Robert Arnott was appointed last year. Robert is an expert in project finance, and we don't know this. This is not in the public domain, but it's my belief that Robert is in the process of putting finance in place. So once the company has the permissions, the operating costs will be dealt with. The funding issues for Andalas will be dealt with through project finance, through farm-in agreements, and similar arrangements. So it's an exciting time for the company. Clearly, there is risk still there for private investors because we haven't had confirmation on the permissions yet, but certainly the statements from the company have gathered pace over the past few weeks, and it's looking very encouraging.
Yeah. I think the one that is holding us back is like it's the finance side of it. I know there's potential there, definitely, you know, like they're in talks, putting me in and all that. But like I said, I don't know what the details of the loan that was. Is it 20% discount they can convert at? Well, that's expiring in July. So I think that's what's holding it back, I think, you know. So,
I think that is a concern. And I think rightly so. You know, they seem to be fairly punitive terms. But the scale of this project, how the price gas sells for out there, the potential yield from each IPP project for Andalas once these are in place. The company currently has a market cap of about 2.5 million. A company like this with those sort of projects would normally be capped at about 80 to 100 million, particularly with the established resources that we know are there, and also the price per million per MMBTU that it sells for in the region. Cantor, the broker Cantor, reiterated its 0.5p price target. It's cited the company as a unique investment opportunity in the Indonesia power in the Indonesia power and energy sector, it's clearly not without risk, but certainly in terms of potential right now, and the noted increase in news flow over the past few weeks, it's looking very promising.
Marvellous. All right, what else are you looking at?
Okay, another company we've discussed here, just a company called Feedback PLC, FDBK. Mm-hmm. This is the medical imaging company that has come on in leaps and bounds over the past few months. The company's flagship product is TexRad, which is selling all over the world. The company said 6 to 8 weeks ago that it was expecting a CE mark for TexRad Lung to take place in this month, so we should hear about that very shortly. And the company recently announced a placing, which wasn't underwritten. It was basically a placing from the senior directors and managers in the company to supply further cash for the marketing and sales of TexRad. The company also said at its results earlier this year that it expected a significant uplift in second half sales from TexRad, which would really transform the full year results. So clearly those are due to come, and things are looking very exciting at Feedback.
Marvellous stuff. And anything else, Al?
Yep, it's a company. I had the pleasure of meeting the CFO, a chap called Martin Perrin, at a shares event up in Edinburgh early this year. I was with my colleague Richard Clemmy at Tertiary Minerals and met Martin Perrin. Now, Martin is the CFO at a company called Vipera. VIP is the epic code, so it's easy to remember. Mm-hmm. Now, Vipera are they provide mobile financial services, and they have a platform called Motif, which provides solutions for secure card payments, mobile banking, mobile payments, loyalty programs, coupons, and so on. The company recently announced half-year results. Revenues of 7.9 million euros, up from 6.8 million euros. Currently got a 40 million market cap. It's been as high as just under 7p, in fact, and as low as 3.5p. Currently trading about 5.8p. The company's also said in a recent statement that it had won its largest contract to date, and that's worth $4.4 million dollars over the next couple of years. And already in the current year, its committed quarter one revenues were 7 million euros, as opposed to 5 million euros this time last year. So the company is making progress. Its motive platform is fully compliant and, in fact, exceeds the requirements of the PSD2 Payment Services Directive 2. So it's a company that's operating. It's got a number of blue chip clients, including Equens and the Mashrank Middle East Bank with its Snap brand. But I think what's significant about Vipera is that it seems to operate at quite a discount to payment services providers and its peer group. You know, the market cap for these providers is normally in the 50 to 80 million region. So certainly looking at the progress Vipera have made, the comparative sales, the comparative profits it's making to others in the sector, this seems to be trading at a discount. So it's one I'm certainly taking a close look in. And as I say, having met the CFO and seen the presentation, they seem very impressive indeed.
Yeah, it's definitely one to put on the watch list there. They've got you know, turnover and revenue there. So, I'll have a look at that. Al, thanks for bringing that onto my radar. Because I did see them, I think they're one of the biggest risers of the day. Why I always check out the biggest risers on AIM. And I think they came into that. A VIP, I saw the ticker straight away. I thought, that's an interesting ticker. So I'll look into that. But thanks for the background. Marvellous, Al. And I'll speak next week, fella.
Thanks very much, Jess. Have a good week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, always there, 88 Energy, that's 88 ticker. At four, always there, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, it was number one in the last 2 days, MySquare. Unbelievable volume today. And last few days, I've been looking at this, I wrote a blog about them on the weekend. The volume is tremendous. It's like by 11:30 today, that five times the average daily volume. And it's way above that now. It's about 7-8 times nearly. Then number three most followed. At two, it's N4 Pharma. That's N4P. And number one most followed company today is Ectech. That's EQT. EQT. All right, top five most liked RSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours I should say. Get the tense correct. At five, MySquare. That's TR1 notification of major interest in shares. At four, MySquare. TR1 notification of major interest in shares. This is Imperium. And the company has taken up to just over 15% of the shares in MySquare. And that's why the share price, as I'm looking at the moment, of course, is very volatile, but right about 20% up, as I'm looking at the moment. At three, Sound Energy. That's Badil, fourth casing point RNS. At two, Jordan Mining Corporation, further drill results from the KB East Gold Zone 2. And number one most liked RNS on Vox Markets platform this morning was from Asia Met Resources, ticker ARS, and they complete the BKM drilling, extends high-grade copper to depth in BKO44 zone. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.